Hello, I'm Mark Steiner.
Good afternoon. I'm Anthony McCarthy.
And we begin our show today, and Monday is our time. It is. And by the way, Anthony, before we start, thank you for the other night and the honor of the James Baldwin Award at your event.
Oh, Mark, well-deserved.
It was a really good event, too.
Thank you. It was fun. It was pleasantly, you know, people always worry when they have events. Great turnout, great food, great fellowship,
and
a chance to honor outstanding Marylanders like Mark Steiner.
Well, thank you. And lots of the really good people.
Thank you very much.
I appreciate it. So there's a lot going on in this world, and we'll be covering so much of it over the next few weeks. We're going to be spending time in Annapolis, by the way, looking at issues around gay marriage because it's right on the cusp, and we're going to talk about what's happening there with that. We're going to be looking at the issue of fracking, which we'll find out more about, which is drilling into the shale in the mountains to extract gas by putting in chemicals and hot steam and water and polluting the surrounding world. And there's a big fight over whether or not we should have that in the state of Maryland. That and much more we'll be doing. But right now we're going to talk about some other issues that are close to home and around the world. We all know that Governor Martin O'Malley decided not to put the construction of a new youth jail in his budget, which many people in the activist community who fought against that, like the people on our program right now, called a roaring success, that they won a victory. And I think there was a victory. But what does the victory mean? We are joined on the phone by the Reverend Heber Brown, who's pastor of the Pleasant Hope Baptist Church here in Baltimore and a leader of that movement. And Heber Brown was going to be in studio, but he's doing his much more important duty of taking care of his children at the moment. And Heber, good to have you with us.
Thanks, Mark. Good evening, Anthony, and everybody. Great to be here. Thank you.
Always good to have you. Laura Furr is with us. She is Senior Director of Youth Justice Initiatives at Community Law in Action. And good to see you again, Laura. Welcome to the program. And once again, also with us is Maggie Phillips, who is a freshman at Notre Dame College and an organizer with the Baltimore Algebra Project. And Maggie, good to see you again, too.
Good to see you, too, Mark.
Settling into your new campus?
It's nice.
Number here is 410-319-8888, 410-319-8888. Heber, why don't you start us off? I mean, half tongue-in-cheek, I said that everybody writing about this and talking about this called this is a great victory that the advocates stopped the jail. What's your perspective?
Well, yeah, it definitely is a great step in the direction of our ultimate goal, which is to completely not only stop the jail but reallocate the funds toward those programs that will assist youth with employment, recreation, et cetera. But it's a great step, and it's a great symbol and sign of what can happen when everyday people get together, get organized, get on one accord, march in the same direction. And you know, despite all the naysayers, and Lord knows there were a lot of folks who were saying, you guys are crazy, I don't know how you're going to do this, you know, that there are too many powerful interests at play here. But community folks came together, young people, teachers, preachers, advocates, activists came together, and we have a notable victory in this in this campaign, so I'm thankful.
Maggie, what's your take? Do you think this was a victory from your perspective?
I want to look at it as a victory, but the way that we must look at it is that he's deferred funding for the jail. So it doesn't mean that there won't be a jail. He's actually said that it'll be deferred from fiscal year 2012 to fiscal year 13. And that he will be getting his people to look at, you know, and research the need for it. So that doesn't mean that there's no jail, you know. So that's, from my standpoint, means that we still do have something to fight for to actually get to the point where there's no new jail for youth in Baltimore. So that's kind of iffy. Like, I don't want to be like, oh, no, we didn't win anything. It was a success. You know, it's one step towards progress, but we aren't at the place where there is definitely no jail. The governor never said no jail. It would be nice to get him to that point one day, but we're not there yet. So it's still a need for us to fight and to continue to organize around the issue.
Laura Furr.
I agree with both.
See, it gets a little closer to the mic. Maybe I'll switch mics if this one's not working quite right.
It is a really great victory. But it's a temporary victory that we've got.
Why don't you let me do this? I'm so sorry. That mic is not happening for some reason. Let me just share my mic till we get someone here to redo the mics.
Sure. That's much better.
Yeah.
So it's a victory, but it's just a temporary one because it is just a delay, a deferral. But we are very hopeful that since we've already reached this level of success, which most people, you know, again, Maggie is right, so many people told us it was not going to happen at all, that we're really hopeful that we can continue to make progress. The financial situation for the state and the nation right now, it really makes a lot of sense to me make these kind of smart financial decisions like not building wasteful jails that cost us social and economic it's a social and economic waste for our state.
This is Anthony McCarthy. I want to ask you, Pastor, and then move around our panel again. One of the criticisms of the opposition to the building of this jail was that this was in the works during the Ehrlich administration. And it was pressure that came from a review done by the feds about the facility where young people were being housed in the same facility with adults. And that they felt that young people were put – their safety was put at risk, and that they really mandated that the state move forward with creating a separate facility for women and for young people, and that it really had little to do with which I believe a lot of the argument that was being made against the jail of the perception and the need to create a separate facility for young people. Because instead of using those dollars, obviously, as a resource for youth opportunity, we were going to build a facility. So it, as Maggie said, it seems like, Pastor, that the perception is we're still going to be forced at some point to build a separate facility to house young people in this state.
Well, I think that, I think probably Laura could speak much more about
okay.
Whatever the perceived mandate or what the mandate really was for. But I will say this, it's clear to many that it's an unsustainable path to continue building facilities to attempt to improve public safety. It's unsustainable. And especially in this climate when we have so much economic strain in the state and across the country, really, it behooves lawmakers, advocates, activists, and all of us to search out new and different ways and better ways to address public safety issues. And the Just Kids Partnership and their recent research really just highlights some of the things that, you know, I pray that lawmakers and others would be very sensitive to, one of them being that nearly 70% of all those young people who are currently incarcerated in the adult facility, about 70% of them get waived down to the juvenile system anyway. And so it would, you know, be a better and smarter move to adjust the policies. It's much easier, or in some respects, much easier to adjust policies than it is to look at a failed monstrosity in terms of a facility and say, oh, that was a bad idea, or maybe we could have done something different. And so our focus now, in addition to continue on this path and pressuring the governor to fully reconsider this project, is to help him to see that new policies and different policies can really help us in the area of public safety, and also it makes great fiscal sense, too.
Mm. Laura?
Yeah, I mean, Heber makes perfect points on all of that.
I'm sorry, Laura. It's
the mics do not want me to be heard.
It's a conspiracy. We don't want to hear Laura Farr.
In reference to why they wanted to build the jail in the first place, it's true that, you know, the youth held at the Baltimore City Detention Center right now are held close to adults. They have frequent contact with adults. Maryland actually was just found to be holding youth in holding cells with adults for longer than legally allowed by the feds. All over the state, it's not just not just Baltimore that's violating this prohibition. But the answer is not, you know, I mean, what are we going to do? Build jails in every county for youth who are charged as adults? It doesn't make any sense. And it's counterproductive to where we want to go. We need to be spending the money on things that are proven to improve the lives of our youth and improve public safety.
Well, let me. You want to jump in here before you open the phone to your 410-319-8888. Let me just throw this up. What Anthony was saying, it seems to me there are a lot of unanswered questions here. All right, so the question is why the jail was deferred. The money was deferred, as you so aptly pointed out, Maggie Phillips, that it wasn't – he didn't say no. He just said, we're putting it off to another day. We may do it. We may build it. We may not build it. The question is, A, that both for women and children in the society, in the city, in the state, you need a new facility for those who are going to be convicted because the facilities they're held in are just not adequate. I mean, that's A. B, there seems to be a larger question that nobody's talking about, which is there a different way to do this so that we don't have to incarcerate so many young people in the state of Maryland? That's the B part to it. And the third part to it is we have this new man coming in, Sam Abed, that I don't know anything about, that most people don't know anything about. And is he a change agent or is he not? So we'll get this. Let's take number one for first. I mean, we do need, it seems to me, and maybe you'll disagree vehemently with this, Maggie Phillips, but that's why I'm going to turn to you first. Maybe you won't. But that we cannot continue to incarcerate those that need to be incarcerated, and they are less than there. There are more than people that are inside that should be incarcerated, but they need to be incarcerated, but they have to be held in a facility that meets human conditions, which they do not right now. Maggie?
Let me think on that one, and I'll get back to it.
Well, Heber and Laura.
Yeah, I mean, Mark, I think you make some good points in terms of recognizing a need to have something in play and in place for those who have some very clear public safety issues that need to be addressed. But the question is that the majority of the population of young people who are incarcerated? And the other question is, are there other ways to do it that you posed? And yes, other states are showing us that there are other ways to do this. In fact, one of the things that we know, as I go back to my issue on policy, one of the things that we know is that the state of Virginia, I believe, recently adjusted their laws to ensure that young people started out in the juvenile system as opposed to leapfrogging into the adult system only to turn right around and go back to the juvenile system. That's something that we can do right away. I mean, that's another way we can do it. The way we are doing it is not the only way it can be done. And I think it's going to take some courage. It's going to take some continued pressure from the community to continue to explore other models, continue to explore the programs that are in the city, that instead of using millions of dollars to build facilities, what if we use that money to support these programs on the front end of life and how they could help to address our public safety issues, our fiscal issues, and just our, you know, our public sentiment about young people in general. I mean, what does it say about us as a society that we're so quick to just lock up children instead of providing the resources on the front end so that they don't go that route? And so, yes, is there a need to address some of the issues where young people clearly need some type of added security pieces in place? Yes. I don't believe that's the majority of young people that we're working with. In fact, with the young people that I mentor in the Baltimore City Detention Center, I can tell you, and I call them brilliance behind bars, Mark. Twice a week I go in, and I'm blessed to be in a relationship with young people who are in that facility, and Laura is right, and you are right as well. Terrible conditions. But these young people should not be, you know, just summarily thrown away and forgotten about. It's an indictment against us as adults and as parents if we allow that. And so there are other ways to do it, and it just takes people with courage to push and say we're going to try something different.
Laura, do you have any agreements or disagreements with what you just heard?
No, I mean, I agree with everything that Heber is saying, and he makes his point so eloquently that I don't even want to.
Well, I'm curious, though. I mean, there is always this weird disconnect. I mean, you know, when you look at the – and I don't want to – this check just on the prison by itself. And folks, join us here at 410-319-8888 and leap into this. We're talking about what seems like a victory to say no to building of the new jail. But as Maggie Phillips pointed out, this is not a no. It's a perhaps later, perhaps not, but not in this year's budget. It could come up the next year, the year after. B, can we build a system that doesn't incarcerate every young person or every person who gets arrested, especially people of color in our communities, they get put into prisons. But let's see, if you do incarcerate people, you can't leave them in places like the penitentiary and the city jail, which need to go. I mean, they are just inhuman facilities. They're archaic from a 19th century. They just can't – well, not city jail isn't, but I mean – but parts of it are. And the state pen is clearly – you go inside the state pen. I mean, it's very weird going inside the state pen. It's just the way it feels inside there. Not and if every prison feels weird, but that prison really feels weird. So there's a lot of angles to this. So and that's why I'm trying to kind of parse out what it is that makes an argument that's been the best interest of our community.
Yeah, there is no easy one answer. Just like there is no one type of kid that we're talking about. Every single youth that is over at BCDC has their own story, has their own things that they need, has their own background, has their own, you know, level of danger that they pose. We can't treat them all like we are treating them now. And reallocating the funding to services that would provide education, employment, counseling, mentoring, all of these things that the youth of our city need to not ever go there in the first place. We treat them like the individual kids that they are at the beginning. And then we don't end up warehousing them in what is, you know, I mean, it amounts to just, it's an awful, awful place.
Let's open the phones here. 410-319-8888. Oh, Hank and Reverend Washington, hold on a second. I just do want to say, ask a question, because you mentioned something, and Anthony, you mentioned something. Who is this Sam Abid that has been hired? You know, when we hired DeVore, he was hired because he was this visionary leader from Connecticut.
Mm-hmm.
Who was going to turn the system around. Something clearly went wrong with turning it around in a major way, and something obviously went wrong between Secretary DeVore and Governor Martin O'Malley, and he's gone. You know, he resigned. He said he had other things to do, but we all know what that means in reality. That's what they said when they pushed me out of the last station. Well, he wanted to go. He didn't want to go. That's the things happen. And so we know the lies of people that those happen that way. So, but who is this Sam Abid, and what do we know about him? And what will he do or not do, do you think? And you said, Laura, you talked to somebody today, and I think you did, Anthony, as well. And Heber, or if you and Maggie know something about this as well, jump in. But we'll start with Laura.
Sure. So we know what the Sun, of course, has reported, which is that he's 35. He's had almost 5 years of work as the deputy chief, I don't know the exact title, of Virginia's Department of Juvenile Justice, which is actually a sub-department of their Public Safety and Corrections. So their juvenile services division is not actually a cabinet-level post. I was lucky enough to talk to an advocate from Virginia who's worked in and around and with Sam Abid for a number of years. It does not sound like he's going to be this revolutionary come in, you know, just clear out everybody, restructure the entire system, restructure how we think about juvenile justice in the state of Maryland. It sounds very much like he's going to get the job done that the governor would like him to get done, and not make a whole lot of fuss about it.
You know, Mark, I spoke to some political folks in Richmond, Virginia, who are involved with the current administration, which is a fairly conservative Republican administration, but they had incredible things to say about this young man, that he is focused. He knows the Fed regulations, and that if Governor O'Malley wants someone, he's not going to turn the system on its head. Two of the folks I spoke to in the governor's office said that's not going to happen, the governor's office in Richmond. But they said he is well-respected, even given his age. Maryland is unlike most states that this position, juvenile justice, is elevated to a cabinet-level position. That's very rare in states across the country. It's certainly a very important issue, but not a cabinet-level issue for most states and most administrations. But they have very great things to say. Now, he was a holdover from the previous administration. As well, which was a Democratic administration.
Right.
And so I think they were very excited for this opportunity for him to come to Maryland. Now, I did talk to some advocates as well in our state who are concerned that he does not have the reputation, at least his short term, as the deputy director of the Juvenile Services Agency in Virginia, for being a kind of, to steal Laura's phrase, a revolutionary, that he is not going to come in and that we will not see huge wholesale changes. That's not his reputation. But his reputation as a thinker and a worker to the director of that agency in Virginia is very well known, at least through political and advocacy groups in Virginia. I think it's going to be very interesting to see because, as you and I both know, Maryland has a very different political personality. This agency has been troublesome for a lot of administrations. I cannot imagine that Governor O'Malley is not going to be seeking some extraordinary advances over the next 4 years from this young man.
Any thoughts, Heber or Maggie, before we head to the phones?
Well, just very quickly, I don't know. I mean, the insight that Anthony and Laura have is the best that I have at this moment on the new secretary. But I will say that, you know, I try not to place too much stock in these type of persons in these positions anyway, and place more of my hope in the people. I mean, even with this latest deferment, while we do recognize and appreciate the governor for the deferment, I'm more excited about the people who've come together to do this. I mean, we're not, as we talk about, I know you've been talking about Egypt a little bit later, Mark, and you don't hear a lot of people, you know, applauding Mubarak, or the political types. You look at the people who are coming together to take, put their hands on their own future, and show. And so, no matter who's in that seat or in that office, I am far more hopeful and prayerful and confident that this community campaign will continue. And no matter what people in the administration do or say, we're going to keep on pushing and moving and making things happen.
Yeah, I'm trying to find – well, let's open the phones here. We said we would, and there's a lot of people calling in now. Get them in this conversation before we take a break at 410-319-8888. Hank, you're on the air.
How you doing today, gentlemen?
Hey, Hank.
Welcome, Hank.
I am blessed. This is the question I'd like to ask, right? As opposed to building this new jail, and I'm not saying that we don't need it, right? But I'm saying as opposed to building it, you have two buildings, three buildings sitting right next to you, the children's courthouse, right? Why not refurbish them from the inside, right? Aesthetically pleasing, leave the outside the way that it is, right? And make that a secure, safe facility, right? Which would cut down on half of the money. And then the money that you use, that you save from building a whole new facility, right? Which, like they did with Northern High School up there on Northern Parkway. They made that school a whole new facility to train officers and firefighters, right? Why can't we do that? We always want to throw up something new. Right, we want to tear down our whole city to build something new. Why can't we refurbish our stuff? And then, like I say, with the money we save, we can always use that to put on the front end of teaching our kids stuff. That's my thought.
Hank, thank you so much. I think that's how we spend our money is a big piece of this issue. Let's go to Reverend Washington in Harford County.
Good evening, and to your panel and to Pastor Brown. I think that we all ought to be concerned because this sends an alarming signal. No matter who calls the tune, our young people are in jeopardy. And I would say this to the governor. In 4 years or 3.5 years, you're going to be looking to maybe a high office. And who are you going to have voting for you if you take this approach? I mean, it's getting to the point that our young men, our young women that fall into the penal institutions, or it's like a farm system for. Hello?
Go ahead, finish up your thought.
It's a farm system for the penal institution, these schools. So I would ask Pastor Brown to call me after the show, and maybe we can work together religiously and spiritually to solve the problem.
Heber, thank you so much for your call, from Washington. Tony and Cindy, the next two callers up. Heber, and then I just, you know, what he was just saying, and I'll ask the three of you. You talk about a movement moving things ahead and changing things. Well, this might sound facetious to y'all, but I don't mean it that way. Can Baltimore be Cairo? Can there be a movement that really changes things, that pushes it? Did this movement change, you think, the jail? Or was this something that fit more into into Governor Martin O'Malley's plans because he had to find places not to spend money right now, and this was a good place not to spend money? It's also a political winner. But you know what I'm saying? I mean, so I just want a reality check from y'all about what you think is real here.
I think that
Maggie,
it can be, even though you said you weren't trying to be funny, I think it can be a movement in a way to move the city forward. And we're really trying to work with the governor and his secretaries just to find ways to move the city forward. And I know tomorrow evening the Alliance to Stop the Youth Jail will be having its first community meeting, and this will take place at Sojourner Douglas College off of Central Avenue, excuse me. It starts at 6 p.m. It goes to 8 p.m. We'll be providing child care and food. And this is our way of getting the community's input. We want to hear from the community. We don't want to hear from the governor and his people and what they have to say with regards to the jail, because they don't even know what they want to say at this point. That's why they deferred the funding for it. You know, we want to know what Baltimore City citizens have to say about the youth jail issue. And really, we want to know if they agree with our thought process that goes along the idea of reallocating the money to the jail to go to community-based programs. We want to know if they know of any. We want to know which ones they think should be created. We want to know where they see the money going, because a new jail, a renovated jail, none of that is where we see things going. We see things going into the hands of the community, and hopefully Abed can see things that way too. I think it'll make his job a lot easier if he lets the community deal with its community members, you know, because that's the most effective. Even through history, you can see the community helping the community makes things more effective. Being held in captivity, you know, and working and for slave wages to create things for the prison industrial complex, that doesn't help to get you where you need to be. That doesn't help make you a better person. And it's even interesting, today in my sociology class, we were reading about Charles Mills, and he even said that we don't learn from the prison complex, but criminals do, you know. And I don't like to use that to refer to people who are incarcerated, but people who are incarcerated learn how to do more crimes from people who are incarcerated. You know, that's what you get to share. You don't get to share, oh, stuff about your family, stuff that makes you happy. You get to share what brought you into the system and ways to get you back, because the system doesn't build up people so that they don't return. It tears down people so that they stay where they are. You know, and the community doesn't do that. The community has never done that. So
we'll take a very brief break. We'll come right back. I'm going to let Heber Brown and Laura Ford come into the conversation. Then we go to Tony in Baltimore. Stay with us. We're going to be the next caller up. And then Cindy in Timonium. We're going to get to both your calls as soon as we return from this very brief break. On the way there, let me remind you that the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland State Mortgage Late Don't Wait program. For more information and personal counseling, the number is 1-877-462-7555. And Anthony McCarthy and Mark Steiner will be right back. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner.
And I'm Anthony McCarthy.
And we are here with Laura Furr, Senior Director of the Youth Justice Initiatives at Community Law in Action.
Reverend Heber Brown joins us, pastor of Pleasant Hope Baptist Church right here in Baltimore, frequent guest on the Mark Steiner Show.
And Maggie Phillips, who joins us once again, freshman at Notre Dame College and organizer in the Baltimore Azure Project.
Mark, before we go back to the phones, yes. I want to pick your brain because you've been covering this issue, and certainly Laura has been involved for a while, Pastor Heber Brown and Maggie. I was very interested by Dr. Washington's observation and somewhat veiled threat to the governor that we will be watching how he handles juvenile justice.
Right.
If he has political aspirations beyond being governor. Right. Do you believe that there has been the kind of political retribution for the very – I remember Bobby Zirkin being on your show, and you all just really going
state
back
–
the state senator Bobby Zirkin. Just this has been a huge failure for the state for such a long time. No offense to Laura and all the wonderful other people who have been working very hard to take care of and look out for our kids. But it hasn't been the political football that I thought it would be.
No, I think that, and I'm going to make this comment, and then I'll let Heber and Laura jump back at us because I think that this is when we had this dialogue, and then Tony, we're going to come to your call as soon as they answer this question. Really, you guys, hold on, we're going to get to you. I've covered this for 18 years, on the air, almost now, 18 years. Interviewed every secretary of juvenile services we've had, every advocate, community advocates, advocates who are involved in advocacy organizations. Youth advocates like Maggie and the young people who came before Maggie, and nothing has changed. Nothing. Wait, that's not true. Things have changed, but they've twisted very slowly, and we're still locking up our children. I think that Kathleen Kennedy Callinan lost because she mismanaged it so badly that was part of what killed her campaign, because she said, "I'm going to take juvenile justice, I'm going to turn it around, I'm going to make it right," and it didn't happen. And it's a very difficult thing to change. So I think that, to be very honest and frank, that people want to – that there's an undercurrent of people want to see people locked up.
Yeah.
That people are terrified of young black kids in the street. And that they see them as – and we've demonized black children to the point where they are seen as dangerous, not seen as intelligent. They don't see Maggie Phillips. They see the kid on the 6 o'clock news. And that's in their heads.
Right.
And so and I think most people don't have the empathy nor sympathy with it. And politicians are not scared of that. They're not frightened into moving, and they sometimes have to be pushed. You gotta push people to make them change things. I think people often are not, they're not worried about a mass rise to change that, unless it's families of working people in the state of Maryland whose children, grandsons, nieces, nephews, friends, kids who are locked up in prison saying, enough. Mm. You know, I think that's part of the problem. The question is, how do you get that turning so that people really care? And let's wrestle with that for like a few minutes and we'll go right to the phones. Heber, you want to jump into that first?
Yeah, well, it's difficult, I think, Mark, to...
I'm not trying to be a naysayer and be negative
me
about
either.
It either.
I didn't
I'm just trying to lay it on
way.
The table.
I'm sorry.
I'm not trying to be negative in terms of the movement. I'm just trying to throw it on the table to see what you think about that kind of thought process.
Yeah, I mean, I think you raise many great points, and I think that I'm full agreement about what you call an undercurrent of those of people and forces that that are benefiting from the current state of affairs in terms of locking up black youth in Baltimore City, and I even did a piece on who's profiting from that, so we can begin to look at that. That's a very real factor in all of this. And another thing to that is that as you talk about how do we get more people to care, I think that's important, you know, having people really, not see this through the lens of sound bites and stereotypes, but to really humanize this issue of what's happening in our community when we just allow this to continue. But as strange as this might sound, I'm less concerned about people caring, and I'm more concerned about the community finding the will within itself, those of us who already do care, finding the will within us to push on this issue until, we fully realize what we know we need for our young people. Of course, we're in the Black History Month this year, and We recognize that as part of that history, as we talk about like the Montgomery bus boycott, it was no easy and quick victory. And I'm sure all along that way, there were many who said, man, y'all should just go ahead and get on the bus because it's not changing. But 381 days later, Mark, and you know, you and Anthony and all who are listening are sensitive to this history, but 381 days later, victory was won. And so it wasn't no 40-yard dash. It was a marathon. It was people who believed in spite of what they saw in front of them, you know, that if you kept on pushing, that things would happen. And it took pressure, Mark. It took pressure. They didn't hold a Care About Black Kids conference. They pressured. They pressured the power structure to bend to their will. And the will of those of us who've kind of soaked up on this issue is very strong. I've been doing this for years, and I'm going to do this for a long time. And I know that Maggie and Laura and many others have that same feeling and commitment. And it's just the question is whether or not we keep on pushing. That's the question. Can we see in ourselves the ability to make this a Cairo issue? And I believe, is it possible? Most certainly it is possible. But it's possible when we believe that we can do it. And we don't look to, you know, with all respect to O'Malley and all who, you know, and everybody else who's in appointed or political offices. That's great. But the great highlights in history and human history for me are the chapters where people got together and said enough is enough.
Now, Maggie, your thoughts. And then we'll open the phones and then turn it off. We'll just get our listeners in here.
I'm just really interested in the idea of getting community support because that's what we need. Any movement needs community support, and especially to add on what Pastor Brown was just saying, to put that pressure on political officials, whether it's at a local level in the city or it's statewide, we need the community support. You know, I just recently got to the age where I can actually make a difference by voting, and we need those voting members of the community to back us and put that pressure on O'Malley with us, on Rawlings Blake with us, on Council President Young with us, you know. And that's where we're working towards doing at this point, because we can't just keep meeting with, like, a few of us who organize around this. We can't just keep meeting with the governor's secretaries and the governor's chief deputy officer. We can't do that, you know. We need the masses of community members who are affected by this to meet with us, because this is an issue and people aren't taking the juvenile justice issue seriously in a world in which schools are being closed, recreation centers are being closed, job opportunities are being diminished for young people, but there's money for a new jail. And we're dealing with that, you know, where even now, the juvenile jail that's located off of Gay Street looks better than most of the schools in Baltimore City public system.
Wow.
You know, it's like, what do you expect? And the young people have to be provided with these opportunities, and it'll mean so much more with the community backing it. And if I was O'Malley and I was interested in progressing to further heights with regards to politics, as Reverend Washington was expressing earlier, then I would be more for helping to bring my state to a better place. And the way to do that is to support these community-based organizations and support these community leaders like myself, Laura, and Heber, who are trying to make a difference and make this city, make this state what it can be, you know? So I think we can get there, and as far as making it an issue as big as Cairo, we can get there. The community just has to realize how it affects them. And even the members who are afraid of young black kids who they see in the street, they have to realize that this fear came from something. This fear came from lack of opportunities, because young people who are in the streets are only there because they don't have opportunities.
Let me open the phone to my door. 410-319-8880, since I promised and promised. 410-319-8888. Tony, you're on the air.
Hey, good evening, Mark.
Good evening, Tony.
Hi, Tony.
Hey, I think the first thing we need to do is come to grips with the fact that not every channel is college bound. And once we come to grips with that fact, what we need to do is, what the state needs to do, is put more money into vocational training and less money into building more facilities to cage young kids. Another thing that the state should do is that we're all states in the United States need to do is one by one start repealing the war on drugs. I mean, when Nixon instituted the war on drugs in the 70s, and if you look at the amount of black men disproportionately incarcerated since then, you'll see that nonviolent drug offenders probably shouldn't be incarcerated as the first means. There should be other ways to deal with folks than using the penitentiary system as the first means to remove folks from the street. So, like you said, the first thing they should do is one, put more money for vocational training because not all children are college bound, and then two, start distancing themselves from this war on drugs and this unfair sentencing that's going on with black men.
Mark, it seems he of course hits all of the right points. There's got to be options for our young people, real resources that give them an opportunity, especially those who are not college bound, to make some healthy choices about opportunities that's going to lead them to employment, that's going to lead them an opportunity to take care of families that they're creating, but also that they're going to be productive members of whatever their community, whatever their neighborhood is, that they feel comfortable and have the opportunity to be a part of that life. Part of this problem, though, that I see in the caller's comments, and certainly with all due respect to Heber Brown, who I just put at the top of my admiration list, and Laura right behind you, Mark Steiner, and Maggie.
Not necessary.
We have, Mark, had conversations about these alternatives in sentencing for young people, these models of incarceration that are different, that lead to education resources and family life skills. And Mark, it doesn't seem to work in Maryland. We have got to have some sort of I don't know how you turn the system on its head in a productive way, but we have got to do something extraordinary if we're going to save these kids. And, of course, one of the priorities for me, and I know for you and others, all children. But these children in Baltimore City, I listened to the mayor. We're going to talk about this in a few minutes. Talk about all of the great things that are happening in our public schools. Well, Mark, on any given day when children are in school, I could take you to neighborhoods where young men and young women are walking the street, who are not seizing or a part of this revolution that so many people seem to see in our public school system. We've got to do this in a very different way.
Laura?
Yeah, I want to point out just that there is a national trend in this direction. A bunch of states are doing what we're trying to do here in Maryland, or at least portions of it. North Carolina, there's a huge effort to raise their age of majority for crimes. Virginia just passed the law that we've already talked about. Connecticut just had a successful effort to raise their age. All of those movements had significant organizing efforts behind them of families and youth. And that's what we're working to do right now. That's what the community meeting is about. I mean, this youth, Maggie and the other youth who are leading this effort, I mean, they're just amazing. I'm just flabbergasted every time, we get them together and they just, I mean, they're like fire. You know, they just take over everything and it's fantastic. And I think that, I don't know. I haven't been here for 18 years. I haven't seen, and I'm sure that there's been trickles up and then falls back and trickle up and fall back. But I really have to believe, because otherwise why am I here, that this time, if we really do this right and we really put in the effort, and I think we are doing that right now, and we continue to do this, that we'll be able to make a change this time. I mean, I don't have a crystal ball, but
it took all the years I've been on the air for the gay marriage bill to get to the point where it might win. It does take a long struggle to make things happen. It takes a long struggle. 410-319-8888. Cindy and Timonium, you're on the air.
Hi, Mark.
Hi, Cindy. Welcome.
Yeah, two things. And the first one is I'm so pleased about the leaders that I'm hearing today on this topic. I also wish that we had leaders from before who, because politics is so cruel, their voices aren't added right now, and that's Salima Siler Marriott and Ken Montague. And they were incredible leaders on juvenile justice in Annapolis, just incredible leaders. And just I mean, the cruelty of politics on people is just, it loses us, all our great leaders. But the second thing is, I think you're being really dismal. I would say the undercurrent, Mark, is a... I do. I think the undercurrent is of people that know people in jail. I mean, if I don't know three children of my good friends at any one time that are in jail, then it's not a normal day. And I think that's the new undercurrent, is that we all know people that are in jail for not necessarily that what they did was right or wrong, but that they're in jail, and we don't want our young people in jail. So I think you need to be so grateful that the jails being put off are not going to happen. Be so grateful for Heber and Maggie and Laura, and then be so pushing of this meeting tomorrow night, because Maggie's point is so correct. She's got to get that community support in order for the secretary to really listen to her and not just give her lip service. So thank you.
Thank you, Cindy. Let me just say, I mean, I hope I wasn't sounding dismal. I mean, I understand. Maybe
you,
I did sound dismal.
You sound dismal. You're dismal.
What'd you say?
And you need to be much more positive, because this is great that the jail's not being built.
Well, Mark, I think you spoke a truth that we've got to hear. Maggie, Laura, and Heber are checking us every time we sound quote-unquote dismal. But I think that we have to speak a truth and a perspective that everybody has to hear. And I think that truth that you speak and that I try to speak spurs on both sides of this issue and other issues that we bring before our listeners every day. I mean, I know that we can't speak love, flowers, and giddiness at all times, but we've got to speak the truth about what we've seen, and certainly your expertise after 18 years is unquestionable.
Well, I think that, well, good, Laura, then I'm going to Heber, you've been a little quiet, maybe I know your kids are around, but I mean, and I'm not trying to be dismal, I'm trying to lay some things out that I've seen as reality. I've also spent 12 years of my life working in the heart of it, in the streets, in communities, in prisons, fighting for the change that way too. And it's been a long struggle. So I'm saying it can happen, but the question is, it does take a community. It does take almost an uprising of people from the community saying, stop jailing our children. There's got to be another way to do it. Heber.
Yeah, I'm in full agreement with kind of the encouragement to kind of, and it does take kind of extra push of faith to look at all of this. I mean, it'd be easy. I mean, and from, especially from the perspective I'm coming from, if I can't draw on the reservoir of strength that I have by way of my faith, you know, somebody might be calling me dismal on this too, Mark. but this, I recognize that, you know, all of the great movements that I've studied, they've always had pitfalls and starts and stops and ups and downs. But when those who are dispossessed, those who are, there's a great book by Howard Thurman called Jesus and the Disinherited.
Yes, I know
and
the book
when,
well.
When the disinherited and the dispossessed and the marginalized and those who have nothing to lose come together and organize and say, you know what, we can change this. That's when something, there's a spark that happens, and that the first, maybe the first stage of revolution begins in the spirit of women, in the spirit of children, in the spirit of men. And once that starts, then we can really, you know, make some changes and do some things. I don't give full power to the politicians and the secretaries and all those folks. I recognize them for what they are. But as Laura said, it's Maggie, it's Marilyn, it's Rashad, it's Brian. It's the young people who are mentoring me in this, because they dare to dream and they dare to put their necks on the line. I think that's maybe another part of it, Mark,
mm-hmm.
that in all the talks and the roundtables and the meetings, all of them are great, but at the end of the day, it takes people who are willing to sacrifice. It takes people who are willing to to stick their neck out. I mean, people. My list of heroes are all people who've been to jail. people got locked up at some point or another because they just believed in it that much. And so that might be one of the things that maybe, you know, a future discussion can, you know, might be a good one to have. How many of us are willing to sacrifice? How many of us are willing to stick our necks out, and not get invited to the next, you know, function, or not get a Christmas card from the governor next year, or not, whatever, because we want change and we're willing to put our necks out for
We have a lot of people. This
wow.
inspired
Look,
tons of people just calling in like mad writers. Let's get a few callers in front. We have to go because I want Maggie or Laura or somebody to tell us where the meeting is tomorrow night so we can get that out there for people to come. 410-319-8888. Let's go to Jay.
Hi, Mark.
Hi, Jay. Welcome.
Hi to all your guests. Hi, Laura. I came to the show late. I'm Janitha McNair. And I think that is your guest, Laura, first?
Yes.
Very good. I know Laura.
Hi, Ms. McNair. How you doing?
Hi. How are you? I run a juvenile detention facility. I've run several in the state of Maryland. And I feel like I'm on both sides of the fence here because I live in Baltimore City. I have a child in public school in Baltimore City, and I have a daughter who graduated from Western, right? And so, you know, I think the battle that has to be fought has to be one that's collective, you know, with our community citizens and our school systems and our departments of social services and so on and so forth. We have to commit to these children. And, you know, I absolutely don't think incarceration should be the alternative to making sure we have resources and that we are preparing our children for the future, because we are failing to do that as a community. And the result is these children falling through the cracks, having nowhere to turn, and becoming a part of a system that is detrimental to their future and ours. And, you know, it's tough because I see right now I work with the young women and I'm fully committed to finding resources, you know, for my girls.
Right.
And I reach out. I'm a strong voice in the community. I reach out to anybody who will give me 2 minutes to convince them that my girls aren't demons or they're not to be demonized.
And it's a quick question because we're almost out of time, and I want
yes.
We have to talk about the meeting tomorrow night. How many girls are in your facility?
I have about 40 girls right now today.
And how many of them are there for violent crimes?
Wow. Not half.
Not half. So, okay. You know, one of the things I'll posit here, and I'm going to turn this over to Maggie to tell us about the meeting tomorrow really fast. Maggie, you ready? Is that if there are 1,000 kids in jail, maybe 30 of them should be there. Maggie?
All right, so there's a community meeting tomorrow evening at Sojourner Douglas College, the one located off of Central and Fayette Street, not the one off of Caroline and Monument. Okay, and it's from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. We will have child care services and food located at the meeting. And it's just our opportunity as community organizers and advocates against the youth jail and for social justice for youth.
And the point of the meeting is?
Get the community to tell us what they want and what they think the money should be used for. This is money being allocated away from the jail and building the jail. And where should that money go and what the community thinks the next step should be.
Go ahead, Laura.
And if people want to continue to be updated on this, they should follow the Just Kids Partnership. We have a Facebook page and a Twitter feed. So if they follow one of those two things, we're constantly updating about the work against the jails.
Just Kids on Facebook.
Right.
Hebert, a last 15-second thought?
Well, just want to thank you again, Mark and Anthony, for the opportunity to share. And hopefully it won't take 18 years for us to have some great victories to share. We're going to keep on pushing. And I just believe that if we come together, that we can really make this happen.
Thank you all so much. And let me say, sorry, I sounded so cloudy, but maybe it got some discussion started, so I don't think it's so bad after all. Laura Furr, Reverend Heber Brown, Maggie Phillips, thank you all so much for the work you do, the struggles you make, and for being here tonight. And we'll have the information about that town meeting on our website, steinershow.org, and the Facebook page, Just Kids, how to connect to that, because I'm looking at it right now. 410-319-8888 is number here. We'll take a very, very brief break and come back to look at the mayor's speech. Reminding you, the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. For more information, www.mecu.com, or go to steinershow.org and see the banner and click it on. The information's there too. We'll be right back.